across America and around the world. Welcome to the voice of America's veterans, Veterans Radio. And good morning, America, and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Throneberry, and I'll be the facilitator today on our program because we're welcoming back after a one-month break in the action, Dwight Zimmerman with At Ease. Dwight, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Dave. Dale.
Dale, that's my name. Boy, how soon you forget.
Yes, indeed. Sorry about that. No, it's great to be back. Last month I was officiating the Military Writers Society of America's annual conference, which was held in Dayton, Ohio. We had a great time, met some absolutely wonderful people, one of whom is going to be a guest in our program later today, and in fact, both our authors won awards at the conference. I was very happy for them because these books are absolutely excellent.
Well, we're very excited, and we want to make sure that our audience knows about what's coming up. Your first guest is going to be Philip Keith, whose book is called Firebase Illingworth, and that's about a battle in Vietnam, and so we want to make sure that people are aware of that and that they can give us a call here on Veterans Radio during the program at 877-573-7825. That's 877-573-7825. And Dwight, your second guest is, where did he go? Here he is, Edward Zellum. And
yes.
He's got a fascinating book of Proverbs.
Yes. Oh, it's an absolutely wonderful project. I was completely enthralled when I saw it at the Dayton conference and talked with him. A fascinating individual, extensive background. The book itself has it brought out an aspect of Afghan culture that has been completely overshadowed by, you know, the violent and tragic events that have marked more than a decade of combat, you know, out there. And so it was really an enlightening and an inspiring effort. And it's a community effort, a collaboration. And I'm really looking forward to having him explain more about that.
Right, and Edward Zellum is going to be on in the second half of the program, but so tell me a little bit more about this conference. I really want our listeners to understand that this is a gathering of writers who it's really a support group more than anything, I think, isn't it?
That's a very good description, Dale. For our listeners who may be unaware of it, Military Writers Society of America is an organization that is designed to, well, we write about military-themed topics in our books and music and everything, but it was created really to be a support group, to help veterans tell their stories, either as part of therapy or, and obviously a combination of it, to record history, to make sure that their stories would not be forgotten. Bill McDonald is our founder, and he was a Vietnam veteran, and I'm the president now, and it's a tremendous honor to have been selected since, as you know, I'm a civilian. Most of our members are veterans or family members of veterans. In my case, my father fought in World War II. And the conference brings together people from across the country, and in a couple cases, internationally. We have a great time. We have sessions in which we teach different aspects of writing. People talk about their experiences, their background, their books, what led them to put their experiences down on paper. And it has been an absolutely uplifting event. This latest event here in Dayton, I was really happy to have as a guest a Navy SEAL from the Vietnam period, Richard Hexel, And he, this was, I was working on this project to help write down their team's experience in the Mekong Delta during the war. And I just needed help to transcribe the tapes. And I talked with the members, and I was happy to say a bunch of them stepped forward to take tapes, and I'm already receiving transcriptions to help move this project forward. And Rick was so impressed with the organization that he signed up right there on the spot and became a member.
Well, that's the point. That's the point. I was amazed and I was attracted to your organization by Joyce Faulkner with the just the passion and emotion that, that all of you and all the members that I've met so far have for the veterans and their stories. And I think that that's kind of the common bound, because obviously that's what we try to do here on Veterans Radio, is to get these stories out and tell these stories. And I always encourage, and I'm encouraging our listening audience right now, if you think you have a book inside your head or a story or an adventure that you experienced while you were in the service, I would go to the Military Writers website, and they can help you out. They can help you get that down on paper. And that's something that I think is really beneficial for them. And I don't, you know, and I don't mind tooting your guys' horns every time I get a chance to do that. But I think
thank you, Dale. Yes. And to our listeners, the website is mwsadispatches.com. mwsadispatches.com.
And if you can't remember that, because some of us have memory problems now, it seems, just Google in Military Writers Society of America, and it'll take you right there. Okay, so right now, Dwight, we're going to get you back into your mode. We're transferring this call to Forward Observation Base Brooklyn to Dwight Zimmerman and his first guest, Dwight Huron.
Thank you so much, Dale. I'm happy to welcome my first guest this morning, an author who has been on the program before, Phil Keith. Phil, welcome back to At Ease.
Good morning, Dwight. Thank you very much for having me back. It's a pleasure to be with you again.
So, you know, you write a very powerful story in Firebase Illingworth. Your previous book, Black Horse Riders, which I have to say congratulations and winning the silver medal from the Military Writers Society of America for Black Horse Riders.
Well, that was quite quite an honor, and wow, that's just terrific.
Well, and speaking of terrific, Firebase Illingworth is another terrific story. What's fascinating is this is an overlapping event, what you wrote about here, to the battle you wrote in Black Horse Riders. Tell us how this came about.
Well, it was interesting because as I was putting together the story of what became the book Black Horse Riders, interviewing a lot of the guys that participated in those events, many of them said, well, you know, we're very happy to tell you about this story, but, gee, there's another story that's even more powerful that occurred to some of these guys that happened about a week later, literally after the events in Black Horse Riders, and you really ought to write about that one, too. And I said, well, okay, maybe we will. So as I finished up the work involved with Black Horse, I went back to some of these guys again, and I said, well, now, you mentioned this other story you had that you thought was even more interesting or powerful. Let's talk about that. And that became the book Firebase Illingworth. It's a sequel in some ways to Black Horse, but not directly, in that, as I mentioned a minute ago, some of the same guys are involved in both stories, but it's quite a powerful narrative these men put forward.
Now, you served in the Navy as a pilot during the Vietnam War, correct?
Yes, I did. I was trying to avoid doing some of the things that these guys were doing down on the ground. I thought they were just amazing in what they did and walking around in the jungles and fighting on the ground, but I ended up pretty much in the same place, and actually one of my tours in Vietnam, the last tour I had, I was actually on the ground too, so ultimately I didn't avoid it.
Would you say that Firebase Illingworth and Black Horse Riders as a form of penance for you, you know, living on board ship in that aircraft carrier for a while?
Well, in a way, yes, indeed. A form of penance for me, but I also hope a form of honor for these guys. I was just so pleased to be, and honored, really, to be able to take all of their collective stories and put them together in both of these narratives. And actually, if I can add a little bit, there's there's actually a third book in this process. It's going to be a trilogy at some point. In fact, I'm working on that book right now, where many of the same men, again, end up about a month after the events in Illingworth, saddling up, as they used to say, and riding across the border into Cambodia. And we all remember those events in 1970. So that will complete the trilogy probably next year.
Oh, looking forward to that. Listen, tell us where Firebase Illingworth was located and who Illingworth was. Because that, especially him, is very... very poignant story.
Yeah, well, the Firebase concept in 1970 was pretty much the brainchild of then Brigadier General George Casey Sr., who, as many of you know, was the father of George Casey Jr., the recently retired Army Chief of Staff. And the Firebase is in this particular story. We're all in a place called War Zone C, Charlie, which was a vast expanse of very forbidding jungle about 100 miles north, east and west of Saigon, former Saigon. And the concept was, in the days of the beginning days of what was then called Vietnamization, to really kind of clear out this territory and set the table, as they used to say, for turning over the operations to the Army of the Republic of Vietnam and start drawing down the U.S. forces and getting them back home. But this effort was the attempt to really root out the many North Vietnamese jungle enclaves, supply bases, infiltration routes, and what the Army was doing at the time was setting up these temporary forts in clearings in the jungle that they deemed these fire bases, or sometimes fire support bases. And they were meant to be very temporary structures lasting, well, in some cases, even one day, but usually several days, and then they'd begin hopscotching across the region, again, trying to ferret out these hidden North Vietnamese operations. This particular firebase was named after a young man by the name of Jack Illingworth, who was a member of Alpha Company, 2nd Battalion, 8th Cavalry, all part of the famed 1st Cav. And he had... been on a patrol in the beginning part of March of 1970, and his unit ran into a reinforced regiment of North Vietnamese regulars. They fought a little battle along a stream not too far away from where Firebase Illingworth was eventually established. And during a firefight, he performed a very brave rescue of one of his wounded comrades who had fallen wounded across the stream, and he jumped up, ran across the stream under fire, picked this guy up in the famous now wounded warrior carry, and dragged him back across the stream to safety. And for his bravery, he was ultimately awarded a Silver Star. But unfortunately, the very next day, he himself was killed in action against the same troops. In this time period, with the establishment of all these fire bases, many of them were named sort of quixotically. Some were named after, you know, the commander's wife or girlfriend, or one case, Firebase Danger. And so the commander of this particular battalion, remembering this young soldier, decided, well, maybe we ought to start naming these places with a little more dignity, and he decided to name this particular fire support base after this young soldier who had tragically lost his life.
One thing that really stuck out on this was that you managed to incorporate the point of view of the North Vietnamese Army commander that oversaw the attack on Fire Base Illingworth. How did that come about?
Well, that was a stroke of luck, and very fortunate, I think, for the telling or the retelling of the story. Doing my research on all of the aspects of this particular engagement, I ran across a couple of reports where this individual had been named, and I started to dig a little deeper. And I actually ran across another journalist who had, in the early 1980s, interviewed him, but he had interviewed him in a totally different context. He had tracked him down. This journalist was writing a story about the boat people who had escaped from Vietnam after the change of government and after the end of the American involvement in Vietnam. And one of the boat people he managed to interview was this former Army commander. So I tracked down this journalist who helped me track down this fellow, and it turns out that after the war, he stayed in the North Vietnamese military. He was a very senior officer, a colonel, and was reassigned to the southern part of Vietnam, and his job, much to his chagrin, was interrogating his countrymen. And he ended up sending many of his own former soldiers and friends, in fact, to the so-called re-education camps that were populating the country at that time. And he got fed up with the system and one day decided he was going to escape it. He literally packed up all 18 members of his immediate family and put them in a wooden boat, and in the middle of the night floated out to sea. And luckily they avoided the North Vietnamese Navy and the pirates. They landed in Malaysia, and a couple of years later he was allowed to emigrate to any country that would take him. He chose Switzerland, and he moved to Switzerland, and he's still there today. He's a very reclusive guy, very hard to get hold of, but I was able to track him down and ask him about the battle. And as you can see from the book, he provided some pretty interesting perspective on the whole operation.
Phil, we're going to be taking a break in about a minute, so I just want to remind our listeners that I'm talking with Philip Keith, author of a fascinating book called Fire Base Illingworth, an epic true story of remarkable courage against staggering odds in the Vietnam War. Phil, where can people get this book?
Well, it I'm proud to say, goes on sale nationwide on Tuesday. You can pre-order it from the Macmillan website. The publisher is St. Martin's Press, Macmillan, and also from the ubiquitous Amazon site. Any Barnes & Noble store in the country, they're all going to carry it. And great bookstores everywhere.
Okay. So thank you, Phil. We're going to take a break right now and be back in just a moment.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Lieutenant Edward Isaac escaped twice from the Germans during World War I. Details after this.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
A German Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we fight.
Isaac was captured and held as a prisoner on board the German submarine U-90, where the USS President Lincoln was attacked and sunk. Upon the return of the submarine to Germany,
He was confined in a prison camp. During his stay on the U-90, he obtained information of the movements of German submarines, which was so important that he determined to escape with a view to making this information available to the U.S. and Allied naval authorities. In attempting to carry out this plan, he jumped through the window of a rapidly moving train at the imminent risk of death, not only from the nature of the act itself, but from the fire of the armed German soldiers who were guarding him. Having been recaptured and reconfined, Lieutenant Isaac made a second successful attempt to escape, breaking his way through barbed wire fences and deliberately drawing the fire of the armed guards in the hope of permitting others to escape during the confusion. He made his way through the mountains of southwestern Germany, having only raw vegetables for food, and at the end, swam the Rhine River during the night in the immediate vicinity of German sentries to reach Allied forces.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio. You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
And we are back on Veterans Radio, and we're coming to you live from the studios of WDEO, 990 AM in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And joining us back on the program are Dwight Zimmerman and his first guest. Dwight, you're on.
Thank you, Dale. And I am talking with Philip Keith, author of a fascinating account of the Vietnam War, Firebase Illingworth. And in listening to our segment on Medal of Honor recipients, that reminds me that, you know, in this battle, a soldier did receive the Medal of Honor. If you could, Phil, if you could just quickly recap what the battle was, and then tell us about the soldier who, his action that caused him to receive the Medal of Honor.
Absolutely. Well, this particular battle that I write about is not the biggest battle of the war. It's not the most important battle of the war. I wrote about it because it really is, in my view, and was a microcosm of the war as it was being played out at that time. And it really represents what many, many of our brave American soldiers were experiencing in Vietnam at this particular juncture of the war. So I wanted to try to capture their experiences and relay their stories in a fashion where today people could appreciate what these men did, and obviously hopefully for future generations as well. But, you know, in the context of the battle itself, these guys found themselves in a very, very difficult situation. They had almost inadvertently been placed in a situation of great grave danger. They were in an open clearing about only a couple hundred yards from the wood line, and they knew that a North Vietnamese regiment was lurking in the area, although they hadn't quite pinned down the exact location yet. And they were virtually told to, you know, sit tight and wait for them to come forward. The whole idea of these small bases was to try to smoke these guys out, and then once they were brought forward, obviously they would be engaged, but not necessarily by the men at a fire base itself, but by artillery and air assets offsite who would be called in to help. Well, as it turned out, North Vietnamese were pretty smart about this, and they decided to attack in the middle of the night. In fact, it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and air assets at that hour would not be of great value, since darkness was a factor in prohibiting them from doing their work. And the North Vietnamese also had a tactic they called danger close, which meant they wanted to get in right away with the opposing force so that artillery and air couldn't really impact the outcome of the battle, because there would be as much danger of killing friendly troops as there would the enemy. So this is what happened. About, best guess, 400 or so North Vietnamese came out of the jungle and attacked this lone fire base populated by somewhere around 200 combined infantry and artillery troops. And the action quickly became pretty vicious and hand-to-hand. And in the process of this fight, there was a young man, his name is Peter Lemon, and he was a 19-year-old Army specialist, an assistant machine gunner, and actually a Canadian by birth, but had emigrated to the U.S. With his family at the age of 12. And he just went into another zone and ended up in the thick of the firefight, literally fighting with a couple of North Vietnamese soldiers, hand-to-hand, grenades, M-16s. It was a horrendous firefight. At one point, his sergeant was gravely wounded by some shrapnel. Peter was a big kid, over 6 foot, 200 pounds, picked the guy up, literally carried him from the front line back to the aid station, thereby saving his life, went back, fought again, was wounded numerous times, finally in the middle of the fight, simply lost enough blood that he couldn't stand anymore and passed out. His actions were incredibly brave. A couple of the men nearby him, unfortunately, didn't make it, but they also fought incredibly well, and they received posthumous Distinguished Service Crosses. It was quite a fight.
Yes, there were quite a few decorations that were, you know, handed out. At one point in the battle, it looked as if the base would be overrun.
It was a very, very close thing. The heaviest part of the action took place from roughly 2 a.m. to about 3:15 in the morning. And the North Vietnamese were very close to overwhelming the position on the southwest corner of the berm that surrounded the base. And by berm, I mean it was only a three-foot-high wall of sand that had been bulldozed up in a single strand of barbed wire around it, so it wasn't very substantial. But fortunately or unfortunately, as you want to look at it, the day before, someone, and nobody knows to this day who it was, ordered a huge stockpile of ammunition to be delivered to the base. It was rounds for the artillery. It was 40 tons of it, Dwight. And
Bill, we only got a little more than a minute left, so if you could quickly summarize that, because that was a pivotal part there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, long story short, that ammunition, there was no time to bunker it in. So in the middle of the fight, it blew up. It was such a huge explosion that a couple of the local pilots reported that it was nuclear in nature. But that sort of broke the back of the attack, and it allowed the action to subside. And fortunately, things got a little bit better for the defenders. It was all over about an hour later as dawn began to break, but it was one heck of a fight.
Yes, and then they were worried that the Vietnamese would attack the next night, but that didn't happen, fortunately.
Yes, they were told to hold one more day, incredibly, and they were just shocked at that. But the North Vietnamese had sustained enough in terms of casualties. They simply melted away. And one day later, the fire base was abandoned and completely dismantled and gone forever.
Yeah. Phil, if you could remind our listeners again, please, when the book's coming out and how they can get it.
Sure. Happy to do that, as always. it officially releases next Tuesday, the 29th, but you can pre-order it, of course, online. It'll be in all bookstores, all Barnes & Noble stores, many independent bookstores across the country, available at the Macmillan website. It's in hardcover. It's in Kindle, Nook, iPad versions. There's an audio version, so we've got the whole gamut covered, and I just hope that it will do honor to the brave men who are part of this story.
Thank you, Phil. I've been talking to my guest, Philip Keith, author of a fascinating and compelling story, Firebase Illingworth, an epic true story of remarkable courage against staggering odds in the Vietnam War. Phil, thank you again for being a guest, and I want to have you on board again when you have the when you finish the third book in this trilogy.
I'd be delighted. And as always, Dwight, it's a pleasure to speak with you and be on this wonderful program. And you do a great service for our veterans, and we all appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Phil.
Okay,
Dale.
That's all right. Thank you very much. I can't wait to get my hands on the book. I know Peter Lemon. We met him. He lives in Michigan. And unfortunately, I hadn't read the book. Otherwise, that would have been the Medal of Honor we would have played. But thank you for sharing this information with us. I can't wait to read this story. It was an area of Vietnam that I was in a year earlier, and it was always a nasty place. So anyway, thank you. Thanks, Dwight, for bringing him on. I think that that stuff still raises the hair on the back.
Don't have a flashback on us.
No, it just always raises the hair on the back of my neck when I start thinking about some of these things. And some of the men that I've met as a result of doing this program, you know, not only just Veterans Radio, but also through the people that you've brought on board. It's great stuff. And we're going to go to a whole different part of the world now, aren't we?
Yes. Excuse me. Yes, we are. We're going to go to Afghanistan. And our next guest, Navy Captain Edward Zellum, who's produced an absolutely fascinating book called Zarbal Masala, 151 Afghan Dairy Proverbs. It won the gold medal at this year's conference at the Military Writers Society of America. I had never read a book quite like this, and immediately, you know, picked up a copy, made it a part of my reference library, except now it's got a home elsewhere. I got to get another copy. So we'll be talking with Edward. Are we going to take a break now, or do we move right in?
Nope, you can go right straight to him.
Oh, great. Well, my guest is Navy Captain Edward Zellum. Ed, salam alaikum. Kubasteng?
Bashado, Tashakur, Dwight John. I'm doing very well, thank you. I'm speaking to you from Tampa, Florida, not Afghanistan right now, but it's a real pleasure to be on the Veterans Radio Network with you and Dale.
Oh, it's an honor to have you here, that's for sure. To our listeners, excuse me, what I just did was a greeting that Ed was kind enough to tell me about. Because I was so impressed with his book, excuse me just a moment, sorry about that, I wanted to give a copy of his book to the Afghan consulate here in Manhattan. So Ed was kind enough to coach me on saying a greeting in Dari, And I apparently told it well enough that the person on the other end of the phone started rattling back. And, of course, I didn't understand anything of what he said.
Well, your pronunciation is perfect, Dwight, and, good for you. Well done.
Well, thank you. Okay, so, Ed, please, give us a summary of what your book is and how it came about.
Absolutely. First, I just do need to say that although I am an active-duty U.S. Navy captain, this book is a private project, a personal project, and I'm not speaking here for the Department of Defense, the U.S. Navy, anybody else but me. The book began as a simple list, a learning tool. I'm a Dari speaker, and when I got to Afghanistan, I found that Afghans speak in proverbs all the time. So I started writing them down. The list became first a learning tool, then it became a hobby, then it became a passion, and then it became a book, and now a series of books that's available in over 35 countries.
Wow. tell us a bit about the exact nature of the book, its format, because you have... You present these proverbs in a variety of ways.
Well, that's right. They, Afghans, as I said, use proverbs all the time when they speak, and they have very deep meaning. They're shorthand for, universal human thoughts. Every culture has proverbs. We say, for example, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. When we say that somebody needs to speak up, that's a proverb. And Afghans do the same thing, except they use them a lot more than we do. And so I found myself working in their language, and my position was up at the presidential palace, working with Afghans every day in Kabul. And, I found myself using the proverbs. I wrote them down. The list grew. A friend suggested that I publish a book, a bilingual book, so we could share the Afghan proverbs not only with other Afghans, but with the English-speaking world. And so the first edition was 40,000 copies. I printed those. I worked with an Afghan high school in Kabul, Marifat High School, to illustrate that book. And so it has 50 original illustrations by Afghan high school students. They worked with me, and we published 40,000 copies. They're now part of the curriculum in over 200 schools in Afghanistan. And then when I came back from Afghanistan, I spent a year and a half there, published the second edition, and then a children's edition, and now it's available in 7 additional languages, and those are the ones that are available worldwide. And all the net proceeds support Afghan literacy charities. I'm a huge believer in Afghan education and literacy is the key to the future.
Yes. So where can our listeners get a copy?
Easiest way is Amazon.com. Barnes & Noble carries it globally. If you want to buy the book in Russia, you can go to Beirut.ru. You can buy the books in India. You can buy the books in Japan. Best place to go to AfghanSayings.com. That's the book's website, and that will help guide you to, no matter where you are in the world, to a place where you can find the book.
Now, each of the... the format that you present, the proverb is initially presented in Arabic script, then you have it in the Roman translation lettering, and then you have the phonetic pronunciation, and then you actually have the English version, and then in some cases you have a comparable version in from America, and we'll be.
Well, that's correct. I wanted to. I'm sorry.
Well, we're coming on our break, so let's hold that thought and take care of it after the break. I'm talking with Navy Captain Edward Zelm about his book Zarbal Masala, 151 Afghan Dari Proverbs, and we'll be right back after this break.
You're listening to Veterans Radio live from our flagship station, WDEO 990 AM in Ann Arbor, WMAX 1440 AM in Saginaw, WDEO 98.5 FM in Naples, and online at AveMariaNet.net.
Thousands of American troops have come home from Iraq and Afghanistan with post-traumatic stress and traumatic brain injuries.
I don't think anybody who goes into combat could ever honestly say that they're not different when they come home.
Don't brush us aside and don't count us out.
Help the USO support these troops and their families. Donate today at giveuso.org. The wounds are invisible. The stories are real.
And we are back on Veterans Radio, and with our guest host, Dwight Zimmerman, and his guest is Edward Zellum, and his book is Zarbal Mashallah. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right or not. I'm just going to interject a question here myself, if you guys don't mind. For our listener, you could give us a call here on Veterans Radio today at 877-573-7825, and I think this sounds great to me. Edward, what was your experience before you got to Afghanistan? Are you a native speaker, or was this something that you learned and then kind of evolved from there?
No, I'm not a native speaker of Dari. And by the way, Zarbal Mashallah means proverbs in Dari. A lot of people ask that question. So that's the title of the book.
That makes sense.
In 2009, the Joint Staff, this was actually a chairman of the Joint Staff Initiative, created a program called AFPAC Hands. And the intent was to create kind of an armed peace corps, you know, if you will, to immerse in the languages and culture of Afghanistan and then go insert individually with Afghan units and organizations and help build and improve relationships. And so that's how I got my language training, 5 months in the United States of full immersion in the Dari language, which is also known as Afghan Farsi. It's very close to Farsi. So that's where I learned Dari, and I began developing an interest in Proverbs there, but it wasn't until I hit the ground in Afghanistan that I started hearing them all the time. And so I would use them personally, professionally, and just for fun. With Afghans, and Afghans, you know, respond extremely well to them. I mean, because now you're speaking to them not only in their own culture, but in their own language, and it's really a very effective way to bridge things.
I think we found that experience occurred, you know, not in Vietnam and in other experiences. When you're able to speak the language, it just makes it a little less complicated when you're trying to, you know, talk with the locals and trying to encourage them to support you, or you're trying to help them and find out what they really need. I admire what you've done, not only while you were in Afghanistan, but this book looks great. Thank you for doing
it. Well, thank you. And there was no plan. You know, it just kind of evolved. But the Vietnam reference is interesting. You know, General Petraeus is a big fan of the book. In fact, the third edition is going to have an introduction by General Petraeus. He recently made some comments in an article last week in the Christian Science Monitor about the book, and he said the book is not about winning hearts and minds. Okay, winning hearts and people. Others have said that. Media have said that. It's not about winning hearts and minds, because winning hearts and minds implies that somebody loses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Proverbs in the book are about connecting hearts and minds. And that's what Petraeus says on Proverbs, and I couldn't say it better than him. I think it's a brilliant way of saying it, a brilliant approach. And he's a brilliant man, of course.
Ed, could you give us some examples of the Proverbs, please?
Well, one of my personal favorites, I try to focus on the positive ones. There are some negative ones, too, you know, and I can share some of those as well. But and I used this when I accepted the gold medal in Dayton a few weeks ago. Bayak gul bahar namesha means one flower doesn't bring spring. And what that means is that it takes the efforts and teamwork of many people to produce something good. And that's what this book was. One flower. It wasn't just me. You know, it was me working with the Afghan high school student illustrators at the high school. It's all the Proverbs fans all over the world who have over 100,000 people in Central Asia tweeted and retweeted the news of the MWSA gold medal a few weeks ago after it was announced. I mean, people are genuinely excited because of that connection of hearts and minds and showing the commonality between people. Another one that I use quite often, and Afghans use quite often, Isa Badinihud, Musa Badinihud. Jesus to his religion, Moses to his. Okay, and I think that would be an especially interesting one for the Ave Maria network. That's a proverb of religious tolerance. Okay, that means to an Afghan and to us, that means live and let live. People should believe in their own religion. And if you understand Islam, any normal non-fanatic Muslim understands that we're all people of the book, okay? We can work together and should work together, and that's what that proverb means. So that might surprise a lot of listeners, but your average line Afghan on the street is actually quite religiously tolerant.
This is where I was so impressed, too. Excuse me. Because the conflict itself has so overshadowed every other aspect of Afghan life, and that's where I really appreciated this book, because it reveals a part that needs to be told.
Well, absolutely, and I'll give you a proverb for that one. Jangle kat teshkeref tarwa husk meshizat. When a forest is on fire, both wet and dry will burn. Okay, and that's exactly what you just said in a proverb. Everybody suffers in war. The wet and the dry burn. And, when the forest is on fire. And, I hope in a small way that these books, and I make no apologies for the bad parts of Afghan culture, because there are some of the traditional ways of treating women, ethnic prejudice, corruption. I'm not making any apologies for that, and I don't. And Afghans don't either. But everybody suffers in war, and this is an opportunity to show the positive side of a people, because Afghans, believe it or not, are not that different from you and me.
I'm on your website, AfghanSayings.com, and it's quite extensive. You have a lot of information on it, and I would recommend to our listeners that they go to it just to find out more. It's www.afghansayings.com.
Well, thank you. And there's actually some very new news on there. I was just notified last week that my second book, Afghan Proverbs Illustrated, won first prize in the Writer's Digest self-published book awards for 2013. That is the children's edition, although it's used by adults just as much as children, I've found. With a full size, full color, all the art is beautifully highlighted, and that's now been translated into six other languages by volunteer translators around the world, and there are five more on the way. And as you said, all that information is available on AfghanSayings.com. So that's the kind of unexpected tack that the books have taken.
Will you be returning to Afghanistan in the near future?
I hope so. I hope to. I don't have any specific plans right now. As you know, people are coming out of Afghanistan instead of going back in. But I have to say, I feel like I'm in Afghanistan every day, because, virtually. Because in social media, Twitter, Facebook, people are passing the word about Afghan proverbs, around the world. In fact, I was at an unrelated event up in New York City 2 days ago, and I was summoned to the table of the Princess Aga Khan, okay, who heard about the books, if you can believe this. And, I had a 20-minute conversation with the princess, at the Waldorf Astoria in New York City about Afghan proverbs. And so they've even reached, somewhat of her level. So it's, who knows where this is going to go. And there's another new book coming out early next year of Pashto Proverbs 151, which is the other major language of Afghanistan. And that book's in illustration right now. Very excited about that. And so there's all the new news, as you said, is at AfghanSayings.com.
Yeah, well, I can tell you the personal experience when I stopped at the Afghan consulate in Manhattan. They were quite impressed. I showed up unannounced, which is kind of quixotic on my part in this post-9/11 world, but when I told them what I had, they invited me up to the their office, and were very gracious about it and thanked me very much for it.
Well, and that's been my experience, you know, throughout in Afghanistan. I mean, I was allowed the choice, and I made a personal choice not to wear body armor very much over there, and I wore civilian clothes a lot because, you know, I believe, and many others do, that body armor separates you from the people. It's a necessity in certain situations, and in certain situations I did wear it. But I viewed the books and the Proverbs, you know, as sort of my cultural body armor. And, you know, that's maybe assuming a little bit of risk, but, you know, with risk comes reward. And I found the whole thing to be a very rewarding experience, you know, in connecting people. And I think that's really where we need to go, especially from here on.
So how long were you over in Afghanistan?
I was there for a year and a half. The normal tour is a year. General Petraeus asked me to stay an extra 6 months to get through the 2011 fighting season. I was working up at the Presidential Palace. I helped establish the Afghan's White House Situation Room in the palace. So I was kind of dual-hatted, working on President Karzai's National Security Council staff and for General Petraeus, you know, at ISAF. So it was an interesting place to be, and that's why I stayed a little bit longer.
Oh, okay. So you said that you're working on 151 Pashto proverbs. Compare the Dari ones with those of the Pashto.
There are some very similar proverbs because it's a shared culture. Although it's similar to Canada in that there are two main national languages. You know, Canada has English and French, and Afghanistan has Pashto and Dari. The main difference, I think, is the way they're collecting them. The first book, you know, the Dari Proverbs, the one that's published now, I collected those on the ground by myself, hearing them, talking to people, writing them down, scraps of paper, you know, that kind of thing. I'm not in Afghanistan now, but there's been a great demand for the Pashto version. And so I decided to try something that apparently is very new. You've heard of crowdsourcing? Have you heard of
Yes.
You know what? Okay. Crowdsourcing is a method where people raise funds on the internet. Everybody contributes a dollar, you know, and a young filmmaker makes a movie or somebody writes a book, right? That's crowdsourcing for money. Well, I don't want money. I want content. And so I set up a collection site, a crowdsourcing site on my website, and I asked Proverbs followers around the world to contribute Pashto proverbs so I could collect 151 for my next book. And the response was overwhelming. Received over 200 that I really liked. Sent those over to the same school in Afghanistan, which is just finishing up the illustrations. And in fact, I should be getting the first batch this weekend, and that will become the second book. So the main difference is in the methodology, and crowdsourcing for content is apparently something new, and or relatively new, different approach. And at least in the Proverbs community, that's what people say. It hasn't been done that anybody knows of. So I would encourage people to explore crowdsourcing for content, not just for money, because, again, that's a way to connect people.
You mentioned the high school. Please tell us more about that, because that's a fascinating story in itself.
Well, the high school is really probably one of the most humbling places I've ever been. It was built in 2001 from the ground up by a neighborhood in the Kabul suburbs, and they educate both girls and boys. It's very progressive. They teach about, you know, they have an English language curriculum. They teach, you know, world religions. You know, the curriculum is very much like an American high school. They have a student council, all those things. And, in fact, it's so progressive that the school was attacked in 2008 by a large group of radicals. And the parents and the teachers and the students themselves defended that school for 3 days, along with the Afghan police. And on the third day, the parents grabbed the kids and they marched in, forced the doors of the school open, dispersed the radicals. And this was a, you know, great personal danger. The radicals wanted to burn down the school and execute the entire faculty. So that's the kind of heroism that and the lengths that Afghans will go to get educated. There's an extreme hunger for that. And That to me, my relationship with that school, and it's a very personal relationship, is something that will stay with me the rest of my life.
Yes. Now, is there a way for our listeners to make a contribution to support the school?
There is. If you Google Marifat High School, M-A-R-E-F-A-T High School, I believe the website is marifat.org, M-A-R-E-F-A-T.org. I believe there's a way to contribute online. I'm not sure. They have what's called a charity box, and for $230 a year, an Afghan kid can have his books and tuition, all expenses, supplies, paid. And so, when I say the net proceeds are going to support Afghan literacy programs, one of the places where the book royalties are going is right back to that high school. So, and then $230 a year is a lot for an Afghan family where the average annual income is about $800 a year. So that's...
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, I've been talking to Captain Edward Zellum on his fascinating book, Zarbul Masalha.
Proverbs.
Thank you. 151 Afghan Dairy Proverbs, which is available on Amazon. And, Captain, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. And it's a great story, and I encourage everyone to try and get a copy of this book.
Well, it's a real privilege to speak on the Veterans Radio Network. And, easiest way, Google Afghan Proverbs. Just type in Afghan Proverbs, and you'll find lots of news and books and, my website, everything else. Just Google Afghan Proverbs, and it's all right there. This is kind of a niche market, but it's growing explosively right now. And I mean explosively in a very positive way.
Yes, well, thank you again, Captain, and good luck.
We'll talk to you soon. Let me say goodbye as an Afghan. Would Yazenda Sobab Baki. As long as the friendship lives, there will be more conversations.
I love it. That's a really great saying.
Thank you very, very much for being on Veterans Radio, Captain Zellum.
Thank you, Dale.
I can't wait to get a hold of the book myself. I think that there's a whole... This is something that we could be doing in every language around the world as a way for us to better understand each other. I think this is just wonderful. Thank you for what you've done.
If you just want to help, you can contact me through the website. And, I think the model is there now. And, yes, we can do that in any language, any culture, any conflict zone, and it works.
I think so. We'll be talking to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Dwight.
Okay, Dwight, good job, as usual.
Thank you.
And I just want to thank Dwight with his at-ease portion. This program will be up on our web probably in a couple of hours, and I want to make sure people can listen to that in our archives if you've missed part of the program. Coming up next week, Bob is going to be talking about submarines. And then coming up on the 9th, we're going to be talking about the children of World War II veterans and a little bit of that story with a young woman from Muhlenberg University who's written a nice book about her dad. And then on... got to remind everybody, on November 16th is the 10th anniversary of Veterans Radio. So we want to make sure all of you, if you'd like to contact us with your comments or hopefully praise and thanks and so forth, that you can send an email to either Bob or Dale at Veterans Radio, and we'll get you on the air. So there'll be more information on that. 10 years. Can you believe that? Thank you, Dwight. Thank you, audience. Until next week, you are dismissed.
All views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of Veterans Radio or this station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.